From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm David Wright of ABC News, and this is On Point. A year ago this week, one of the most tumultuous weeks in the Trump presidency, even by Trump standards. The president had just fired his FBI director, James Comey, days earlier. Then, May 17th, breaking news.
Moments ago, the Department of Justice announced it is appointing a special independent counsel, former FBI director Robert Mueller.
That's CBS's Scott Pelley reporting from the North Lawn of the White House. Of course, the news hasn't stopped breaking ever since. As the Mueller probe enters its second year now, the president continues to denounce it as a witch hunt, and members of Trump's inner circle have indicated they now want to raise the heat on Mueller to wrap it up. Just about the only person who's been silent is the man in the eye of the storm, the special prosecutor himself. This hour on Point, the Mueller probe, 1 year and counting. You can join us online, on air, or online. What do you think? What questions would you want answers to? And what's your patience level? How long are you willing to wait to let Robert Mueller finish his work? Joining me now from Washington is Chris Strom. He is the justice correspondent for Bloomberg News. Chris, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, David. It's great to be here.
First off, we want to go through sort of where things stand at this point. But first, there's new information breaking out this morning. A document dump from the Senate Judiciary Committee at 9 a.m. They released about 2,500 pages of transcripts. These are closed-door testimony from nine witnesses who attended that infamous meeting in Trump Tower back in June of 2016 with a Russian lawyer promising dirt on Hillary Clinton. And among the witnesses, Don Jr., Jared Kushner, former campaign chair Paul Manafort. What are we learning from this?
Well, we're going through these documents now. There's going to be more that's going to be learned as they're reviewed in more detail. But at this point, the main issue is that Donald Trump Jr. is saying that he didn't tell his father before the meeting occurred. And this meeting was a really consequential meeting and is one of the center points of Mueller's investigation. And what's happening is that there's a dispute over to what degree this meeting was an example of collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign. And so
basically this lawyer came in, and it appears that the Trump folks expected that she had dirt, but that maybe she didn't deliver in the course of that meeting. Is that the gist of it?
Right. Before the meeting took place, there was communications between the Russian side and Don Jr., in which the Russians said that they have damaging information on Hillary Clinton. And Trump said, if that's true, I love it. And he went forward with the meeting. And after the meeting, Trump Jr. and Donald Trump himself issued a statement that turned out to be misleading, saying that the meeting was about adoptions, when in fact we're learning from these transcripts that there was much more substance discussed than just adoptions.
This morning, Don Jr. is out with a statement saying, "The public can now see that for over 5 hours I answered every question asked and was candid and forthright." Senator Dianne Feinstein, the ranking Democrat on the committee, released her own statement calling this meeting one piece of a much larger puzzle and said that it confirms that the Trump campaign was willing to accept Russia's assistance. Now, this is part of the Senate Judiciary Committee's investigation, separate but parallel to Robert Mueller's investigation. Presumably he's looking into that meeting as well. Where does his investigation stand?
So 1 year in, a lot has happened, needless to say. What we have now is a series of indictments and charges that have come out of the Mueller investigation. It's important to step back and take stock of how far we've come just in 1 year. Mueller has kind of gone through buckets in his investigation. And last fall, we had the indictment against Paul Manafort, who was Trump's campaign chairman, and his deputy, Richard Gates. And then we had an indictment or a guilty plea against George Papadopoulos. And then we had a guilty plea against Michael Flynn, who was Trump's national security advisor. And then we had indictments against Russians for weaponizing social media in order to damage Trump and sow discord in the U.S. And so it's been a year. It seems like it's been a lifetime. But in a way, you can see these different chunks of the investigation and how Mueller has been building his cases, some of which are going to trial. And it's our understanding now that Trump is into the meat of the investigation into what, if any, specific cooperation took place between Russia and the Trump campaign to interfere in the election, and whether or not Trump or anybody else obstructed justice and by seeking to shut down the investigation.
One of the big issues yet to be confronted is the hacking and release of DNC emails, also the emails of Clinton's campaign chair, John Podesta, and other members of Trump's inner circle are thought to be in possible jeopardy here. Roger Stone, his political advisor, Don Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, possibly even Donald Trump himself. What's the likelihood that we're going to see an interview of Donald Trump by the special counsel?
It seems less and less likely that Trump is actually going to sit for an interview. Trump's legal team, including his new lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, have been sending a lot of signals that they are not going to do an interview, that they don't believe that it's justified, that they don't believe that Trump would have anything to add that Mueller doesn't already have. It's hard to imagine that Mueller is going to be able to shut down his investigation, bring it to a conclusion without talking to Trump. And it's also important to note that Trump hasn't talked to other specific key individuals, such as Trump Jr. and Roger Stone. And Mueller's team did talk to Jared Kushner early on about the Flynn matter, but it would seem likely that Mueller would want to look back on Jared Kushner and possibly talk to him again. Or it's possible that Mueller isn't talking to these people because they are the specific targets of the investigation and they're going to be indicted.
There's so much to unpack in just a brief news program on this. One can only imagine the number of boxes stacked up in Robert Mueller's office and the number of open files there are. But to the point that you made about Rudy Giuliani pressing for Mueller to wrap this up, let's hear not from him, but from Vice President Mike Pence. He spoke last week to NBC's Today program.
It's been about a year since this investigation began. Our administration has provided over 1 million documents. We fully cooperated in it. And in the interest of the country, I think it's time to wrap it up. And I would very respectfully encourage the special counsel and his team to bring their work to completion.
Has Mueller himself given any indication what he sees the timetable to be?
No. Mueller has been completely silent, only speaking through his legal filings. It seems that Mueller is into the meat of his investigation on whether there was cooperation and whether there was obstruction of justice. But there's no indication right now when Mueller's investigation is going to conclude.
From a listener on Facebook, John Dixon writes, there's been nothing on Trump. He's investigating a person, not investigating the crime. It needs to end. And from Matthew Wood, a contrasting point, he says, let's have it go on for as long as the Benghazi investigation, just to be fair. Shira is calling from Buffalo, New York. Shira, what do you think?
Yes. Hi, David.
My hometown.
Oh, yeah, great. Everything's great here. So I just wanted to say that it seems to me that there is so much smoke here that there it's hard to see how there's no fire somewhere. So many connections and contacts between Trump, people close to Trump and the Russians, financial ties. And I would think that if there's even a 1% chance that somebody in our government now worked with a foreign government, conspired with them to affect an election, we need to let that investigation go on. And if Trump is innocent, then he should want it to go on too. He should want to be vindicated. He should want, if there's even a slight chance that someone near him played a role, he should want that to come out for the good of the country. So I think that his effort to end this investigation, this desperation to end it, is suspicious all on its own and is a threat to our very democracy.
Thanks very much for the call, Shira. To be fair to the White House, that is the official position of the White House. They say the president is fully cooperating, that the special counsel is continuing his work, and that the president's lawyers have cooperated every step of the way. However, they have expressed concerns about the scope of this investigation. Chris, can you tell us more?
Sure. There have been back and forth negotiations between the Trump team and Mueller's team about the scope of the investigation, whether Trump is going to do an interview. And early on, Trump's legal team urged cooperation. But now that Giuliani has come in, there is more and more resistance to cooperation. And Mueller still has the additional work of the investigation to complete. And it's hard to see how he can wrap this up without going through all of – turning over all of the stones that he needs to turn over. It's important to remember that early on, before Mueller was even appointed, Trump and his allies were saying that there was no contact between people on the Trump campaign and Russians. And now we know a year later that there were multiple contacts. And so the longer the investigation goes on, the more we learn about contacts and financial relationships between Trump and Russians.
Chris Drom of Bloomberg News, stay with us. We are taking stock of the Mueller investigations 1 year in. 19 indictments and guilty pleas so far. The president claims it's a witch hunt, but he's not the first to face tough scrutiny from a special counsel. I'm David Wright of ABC News. This is On Point.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you love to find and hear great new music, but you don't know where to start, let All Songs Considered be your guide. It's NPR's weekly music discussion and discovery podcast with tons of new songs and artists to fall in love with. Hear All Songs Considered in the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm David Wright of ABC News. We're taking stock of the Mueller probe, the special prosecutor's investigation from possible obstruction of justice to so far unsubstantiated allegations of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. We're talking with Chris Strom, justice correspondent for Bloomberg News. Chris, the original mandate signed by the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein gave Mueller permission to look not just at this Russia issue, but also at any matters that may arise. That would seem to cover all manner of sins. Does Mueller have carte blanche to examine Trump's financial dealings?
The critics will say that Mueller is going out of bounds in terms of this material that he's reviewing. But the Rosenstein's authorization gives Mueller a broad authority to pursue matters that arise during the investigation. And Mueller just had a big court victory against Manafort, where the Manafort's lawyers argued that Mueller had exceeded his scope by bringing the indictment against Manafort. And a district judge in D.C. court just ruled that Mueller did not exceed his scope. And so we now have a court ruling that says that at least what Mueller has been pursuing up to now is not out of bounds.
Just this week, there have been a couple of new financial questions raised, one about a Chinese telecommunications company that had been in the focus of U.S. sanctions, another about an official from Qatar who apparently attended a meeting at Trump Tower. That pointed out by Michael Avenatti, the lawyer for Stormy Daniels. How seriously should we take those allegations? Do they fit into this probe at all?
Well, it's interesting because we have these worlds that are colliding. The Avenatti world with Stormy Daniels is now colliding into the Mueller investigation. And Avenatti is related, his case is directly related to Michael Cohen, who's Trump's lawyer. And the Qatari issue is coming up in terms of Jared Kushner being aligned with Qatari funding, and it's a very messy issue. It's unknown at this point to what degree Mueller is is pursuing this. We do know that Mueller has been looking at the finances, and he's been very meticulous when you look at some of his casework already, especially with regard to Manafort. And so, again, this is another example of Mueller needing to turn over all these stones that he finds to figure out what's relevant and what's not. And when he finds stuff that's not relevant, he then has to figure out what to do with it if it's a matter that needs additional investigation. And that's what he did with Cohen, where he passed it off to the Southern District of New York.
And then there is former adult film actress Stormy Daniels, as you say. That's a whole different subject. One quick question there, though. Do we expect Mueller to sit down with her?
I don't have any indication at this point that Mueller's going to sit down with Stormy Daniels.
That's being pursued separately in the Southern District of New York.
Correct.
Now, Steve is on the line from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Steve, what do you think?
David, it seems to me that given the ferociousness of opposition to Trump, that there are many people who would like the Mueller investigation to go on for as long as Trump is in the White House. That's my first point. My second is a question. The accusation of collusion it sounds very terrible, but I really have no idea what it means. I mean, it seems to me that leaders of countries like Barack Obama often speak out and about the elections in other countries. So I don't see what the real crime is that we're talking about in the first place.
Chris, what do you think? There is a difference between collusion and conversation, isn't there?
Absolutely. And this is what Mueller's trying to get the bottom of. Collusion doesn't actually exist as a legal term. You have to talk about conspiracy or hacking computers. You have to find actual violations of U.S. laws. You can find bank fraud, tax evasion. You can find conspiracy. And this is what Mueller is looking into. Was there a quid pro quo with Russian operatives or the Russian government that the Trump campaign entered into some kind of an agreement or had knowledge of the hacking operation against John Podesta and the leaking of emails through WikiLeaks?
Right.
All of this is not – we don't know yet exactly – what Mueller has found out. We believe that Mueller is going to put forward another set of indictments against Russians for the actual hack operation. But
the question is, did anybody in the Trump organization or the Trump campaign know about that or was given a heads up? There is a report in today's New York Times about a possible missing email. Somebody testified behind closed doors, a White House official, that he remembers getting an email from George Papadopoulos that suggested that he had been approached by a Russian operative before the conventions. I'd like to bring in another perspective now. Mark Toohey was principal deputy to independent counsel Ken Starr in the Whitewater investigations. That was before it became the Lewinsky investigations. Of course, that was in the 1990s. President Clinton. Today, he is counsel with the law firm of Baker Hostetler and joins us from Washington. Mark, welcome to On Point.
Hi, David. How are you?
Does this all take you back down memory lane?
It sure does. In fact, it takes me back not just to that year I spent with Whitewater, but back to Watergate, because in the midst of all of the independent counsel controversy in the late 90s, I served on a commission chaired by former Senators Dole and Mitchell with Dick Thornburg, John Roberts, Carla Hills, Drew Day, Zoe Baird, and David Skaggs, in which we concluded that the Congress should not reenact the independent counsel statute, but rather should revert back to a blend of what the Watergate special prosecutor operated under and the Department of Justice's enacted and then amended special counsel rules that we proposed and which were enacted. And those are the rules under which Rod Rosenstein, who worked with me in the Whitewater investigation and is a terrific attorney and does not deserve the criticism, in my judgment, that he's been receiving.
So you worked with Rosenstein in the Whitewater investigation?
Yes, yes.
Amazing.
Rod was part of the team for a short period, as I was for a short period.
But
year,
what you're
saying...
What you're saying here is that the special counsel has taken various different forms over the years. Archibald Cox was fireable by the Department of Justice. Ken Starr was authorized under the Independent Counsel Act. He was not fireable by the Justice Department. He was truly independent. And Mueller is back to the previous model. He works for Rod Rosenstein and serves at his pleasure. Serves at the pleasure of the Justice Department or the acting attorney general in this case.
That's right, David. And it's a model which recognizes the responsibility and the authority of the attorney general or his or her designee, in this case Rod Rosenstein, to frame the reference, which Rod did, and to oversee the investigation in a matter that is consistent with Department of Justice policy, and I think it's the appropriate format, and it seems to me that the format is working very well. And most importantly, as Chris said, we hear nothing and should hear nothing from Bob Mueller.
If I could ask, given that this is essentially the anniversary, where was the Ken Starr investigation 1 year in, and what other shoes were left to drop in the years that followed?
Good question. There were four major investigations underway. The investigation, certainly, of the bank transactions in Little Rock, the investigation of the death of Vince Foster, the Treasury Department and Department of Justice conflict issues. When I left, most of those investigations, the fact-finding was completed. There was some special concern to make sure that this was done as thoroughly as possible, given the critics. And so when I left, most of that was done. Lewinsky was 4 years away.
4 years away?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. So yeah. That's a significant amount of time. 1 year is not a big milestone by comparison.
Well, you know, the time issue that you and Chris addressed, and I think Chris was quite right, given the fact that this is a supervised investigation that will not be endless or without supervision, number two, the fact that it's being conducted by a highly professional lawyer and a team of lawyers under Bob Mueller. And number three, the fact that if turning over the stones, which Chris is quite right about, has to be done before this is completed, a year is really not a very long time. And I don't expect it to be endless. I expect Bob to continue with his team to search and for the truth and the facts and resolve this in as expeditious a way as he can, but he's not going to be pressured.
We're talking with Chris Strom of Bloomberg News and Mark Toohey, former principal deputy to Ken Starr in the Whitewater investigation. Dan is joining us from Marshfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Chris. Thanks. I just wanted to continue kind of on the course that we're on and bring up where we are in context in other similar investigations. I know we talk about Whitewater. There's also Watergate. There's, you brought up Contra. You know, what is generally the duration of these very in-depth investigations, and what kind of can we expect to see in terms of where we'll be, you know, a year, 2 years down the line?
Mark Toohey, want to field that?
Well, if we look at the charge that Rod Rosenstein gave to Bob Mueller, it has three components, as Chris indicated, or you indicated, links between the Russian government and individuals associated with the Trump campaign, matters that arise directly from the investigation, and then other matters within the scope of the special counsel's mandate, which means any federal crime committed in the course and with the intent to interfere with it. That is the framework, and anything in addition to that would have to be approved by Rosenstein. I think this is not open-ended in that sense, and I think that the the grand jury investigation is being pursued, I think, quite thoroughly. But I think also Bob Mueller and his team are going to be quite aware of the fact that this cannot go on in this environment without limitation. So I think we're going to see some – I think the next 6 months will be very important in this investigation.
I'm David Wright, and this is On Point. You make the case that when you were with the Starr investigation, it was not yet the Monica Lewinsky case. It was about basically a land deal, questions of corruption. Ultimately, the Ken Starr investigation hinged on sex. November 19, 1998, Ken Starr testified before the House of Representatives and laid out the evidence to support his charges of perjury against the president.
False statements under oath, false statements to the American people, false statements to the president's cabinet and his aides, witness tampering, obstruction of justice, and the use of presidential authority and power in an effort to conceal the truth of the relationship and to delay the investigation.
That was the investigation into the affair with Monica Lewinsky, the White House intern. Clinton was ultimately impeached in December of 1998 by the U.S. House of Representatives, but was acquitted by the Senate. Democrats raised concerns about partisanship from Ken Starr. Trump's allies have raised similar questions about Mueller. Is that just tactics? Is that just fighting form in Washington, or is it fair? Mark Tuohy?
I see no evidence. I've known Bob Mueller a long time, and I've worked with him. I see no evidence at all that this is partisan on behalf of Bob Mueller or his team. And when there was an incident 6 or 7 months ago with a couple of investigative members of the team that appeared to have some partisanship context, Bob Mueller took immediate action. I'm not going to comment on the motives of the White House. I don't see that this is a partisan investigation at all.
Briefly, was Ken Starr a partisan? And did those accusations ruffle his feathers, anger him, worry him? Or does he have regrets? Have you talked to him since?
Well, I talked to Ken from time to time. The issue of the Lewinsky investigation was a matter of some concern, for sure, because it appeared that it really had nothing to do with the original mandate or the dimensions of the initial appointment. However, I will say this. Then independent counsel Starr went to the Department of Justice to explain that this had come up, and it was you can call it sex, but it really was false statement by a president. And Ken did take the caution to go to the Attorney General, and I think it may have been the deputy at that point, and to explain that this had come up. And it's my understanding that the Department of Justice concluded that if it had to go into an investigative phase, better that the current independent counsel, rather than appointing a new independent counsel, would have to be the result. And so, I think there are questions about whether the Lewinsky thing, should have ended up where it did. But the fact of the matter is, he followed the course that was set out with respect to consulting with the Department of Justice on it.
Very interesting. And Mueller seems to be following the course where it leads as well. Where it will lead is anybody's guess. We're taking stock of Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's probes now 1 year in, showing no signs of wrapping up soon. And it's looking into the president's campaign, his associates, possibly into the president himself. We'll hear from you more after the break. I'm David Wright of ABC News. This is On Point.
I'm Ophira Eisenberg. Join me on NPR's Ask Me Another as we challenge contestants and celebrities to nerdy word games, music parodies, and ponderful trivia. Find us every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm David Wright of ABC News. We're taking stock of the Mueller probe 1 year in. Listeners, Is this a big story? Is it an important story in your town? Our guests are Chris Strom, justice correspondent for the Bloomberg News, and Mark Toohey, who is principal deputy to independent counsel Ken Starr in the Whitewater investigation. I also want to bring in another voice for some historical context even farther back. Leon Nafok is a staff writer at Slate. He's also the host of the very popular podcast Slow Burn. It's a fascinating look at the Watergate scandal and how it felt to live through that investigation as it unfolded. Here's Leon and the opening moments of the podcast.
The fascinating story
and the strange name Watergate
of the gang of wiretappers who were caught in the headquarters of the Democratic National Committee.
I'm your host, Leon Nafok. I will be your guide to everything you never knew about the greatest American political scandal of the 20th century. What was it like to experience it in real time? And how did it feel to wake up every morning wondering what was going to happen next?
Leon joins us from New York. Welcome to On Point. Leon?
Hello, David.
I wonder, 1 year into Watergate, to borrow a phrase from that era, what did we know and when did we know it?
We knew quite a lot. So the break-in into the Democratic headquarters happened in June of 72, right? So a year after that put us in into June of 73. By that point, a lot had already happened. I mean, we had two of Nixon's top aides had resigned, Haldeman and Ehrlichman. A special prosecutor had been appointed to investigate Watergate. And I think most importantly, public televised hearings had begun in the Senate, which the entire country was watching with bated breath. And it was right about in June of 73 when sort of the most important witness testified, which was John Dean, Nixon's former White House counsel.
So that was all within the first year?
Yes, sir.
Wow. So Watergate moved very fast.
Well, right. So the whole thing was about 2 years and 2 months between the break-in and Nixon's resignation.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And yet, even in that foreshortened period of time, there was a similar pattern in some ways. You had the administration pushing back hard at the notion that the Washington Post was doing anything more than fake news. And B, that that this was healthy for the nation because the president had so much other important stuff on his plate.
That's right. And I think that really worked for a long time. I mean, the break-in happened in June of 72. The 1972 election was in November, and Nixon won that by a landslide, even though by that point there had been all those stories in the Washington Post that we remember, watching in All the President's Men. And there had been all kinds of suggestions that something was wrong, that campaign money was being used to pay these burglars, and people just didn't really tune in to the scandal until the following year. It was really kind of crickets for all the hay that journalists were trying to raise about this and certain people in Washington and of course the DNC. It just didn't really work. People didn't really care. I think they didn't even really know what Watergate was when they went to the polls in November of 72.
So it sounds like this is seismic by comparison, at least the interest in it, maybe much more so, perhaps because we have the memory of that time.
Maybe, yeah. I would agree. I think people have become intrigued by this more quickly than they did with Watergate. Maybe it's because the
levels of cynicism are higher.
That, and I think also that the burglary that was at the heart of the Watergate scandal seemed just so, in a funny way, like beneath the presidency, right? It seemed like no way these guys, who are running our country would stoop to, breaking into an office building and bugging the phones. It seemed so small compared to everything that Nixon was doing at the time, which included, going to China and signing, treaties with the Soviet Union. It just seemed like so far-fetched that the president would engage in such shabby crimes that people just didn't really believe it, I think.
Now we're used to shabby presidents, or at least everybody thinks the president is shabby, whether it's Clinton Trump.
Right.
We've got a lot of people on the phones, but our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I want to bring in as many people as possible to question our panel here. John is calling from Bethel, Maine.
Yes. Hi, David.
Hi, John.
My comment is my concern about listening to the panel so far is that it seems like you're missing the point by just focusing on Trump. This is about the Russians. They attacked our election. If you read the 38 pages of Mueller's indictment of these Russian people and entities, they attacked. I mean, in that indictment, in that 38 pages, there are 30 or 40 physical acts that this, you know, St. Petersburg internet company created, you know, through hacking and through faking, you know, IDs and creating actual physical things that happened in the country. And it seems like President Trump's campaign was more than happy to participate in stolen documents, stolen emails, just like the break-in at Watergate that your previous guest just mentioned.
Well, to be clear, they may have benefited from stolen emails, and that may have been the point of the Russian interference, but we don't yet know for certain whether they actually colluded in that. That's kind of the crucial question for Mueller, isn't it?
Well, exactly. But so it gets pretty close when three of the top officials in the campaign have a meeting as soon as possible with someone who says, hey, we've got some dirt. And the dirt is, we stole these emails. We broke in just like the Watergate break-in, except we did it electronically. And that was the point I wish that you guys would focus a little bit more on. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, John, for the call. Chris, let's go back to you, Chris Strom of Bloomberg News. You know, that is kind of the crucial question about that June meeting at Trump Tower in 2016. Correct me if I'm wrong here. My sense is that we know that they were interested in Russian dirt, but we don't know if they ever got any.
Well, here's the thing, is that we've learned through the Mueller investigation and through other revelations that there were multiple contacts between the Russians and the Trump campaign. And as early as the spring of 2016, Russian operatives were approaching Trump campaign people and saying that they had information and dirt on Hillary Clinton. And so what we still need to see from Mueller is whether there was an actual intentional act to cooperate with the Russians to interfere in the elections. And one of the big questions that still needs to be answered is, if there is evidence of criminal activity, does Mueller actually bring in an indictment against Trump, which would be an indictment against a sitting president, or does he pass that information off to Congress, and then Congress has to consider impeachment like what happened with Watergate?
And the result of that vote would depend potentially on the results of the midterm elections, right? I mean, if he concludes this thing in the next couple of weeks or in the next couple of months, then perhaps a Republican Congress could decide this. But the ground may have changed by the time November rolls around or January of next year, right?
Well, it's interesting because Trump is prolonging the Mueller investigation by resisting doing an interview. And the longer this goes on, the more potential there is that this is going to bleed into the fall. And you could very well have the House swing over to the Democrats in the fall, and then Mueller brings forward his information, and then you could have impeachment proceedings.
So it's a game of Russian roulette, if you'll forgive the pun. Daniel is calling from Eclectic, Alabama. What a great name for a town.
Hi. My question was, you know, it's been a year. Is it right to keep having taxpayer money put into an investigation that they have no evidence of so far, or nothing they can actually bring charges upon?
Well, there have been 19 indictments or guilty pleas. That's something, right?
Yeah, but not against Trump.
Not against Trump.
And that's what they're going after.
Well, presumably they're going after the campaign's associates as well. The mandate is to look at Russian interference and possible collusion by Trump associates and issues that may arise. Is that, in your view, too broad a mandate? Do you think it should be narrowly focused on the question of Russia and Trump, and if once we've looked at this, we should move on?
Correct.
Thanks very much for the thoughts, Daniel. Where you stand and what your patience level is probably depends very much on your politics here. Nearly 7 in 10 adults say that they support Mueller's focus on possible collusion with Russia. That's according to an ABC News Washington Post poll last month. 64% say that they want the special counsel to investigate Trump's business activities. 58% support investigating alleged payments by Trump to silence women who say that they had affairs with him. But the numbers change depending on your partisanship. Only 49% of Republicans support the Mueller probe, according to that Washington Post ABC News poll. Kathy is calling from Colchester, Vermont. Kathy, where do you come down?
Hi, Kathy. Hi, Kathy. Hi, David.
Hi, David. Hi, Kathy.
You're looking at a quote I wanted to read. It's a George Sand quote. The truth is too simple. One must always get there by a complicated route. And then I wrote below that, go Robert Mueller III. I see him as doing the detailed work that Mr. Comey did. I just finished A Higher Loyalty. I know in hindsight he may have used a different judgment on some of the things that he did, but he was seeking the truth. And I am so happy that Mueller is in charge of this investigation. And truth is complicated, but I think if anyone can, he'll get to the bottom of it.
Thanks very much for the call, Kathy. Really appreciate the quote from George Sand.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
I'm David Wright, and this is On Point. We are talking with Leon Nafok, the host of the podcast Slow Burn, Mark Toohey, principal deputy to independent counsel Ken Starr, and Chris Strom, justice correspondent for Bloomberg News. Mark Toohey, what do you make of that quote from George Sands? The truth is not necessarily a straight path, is it?
Well, and that's the nature of a grand jury investigation, and especially one that is multifaceted. You know, there are all kinds of activity going on in terms not just the potential conspiracy involving U.S. citizens with Russia, financial crimes, money laundering, foreign money. And don't forget, we have another investigation going on in the Southern District of New York under that United States Attorney's Office. Judge Kimball Wood, an experienced, highly respected district judge, has appointed Barbara Jones, a career prosecutor and former district judge, as a special master to examine lots and lots of documents that may end up both in a grand jury in the Southern District of New York or in the Mueller grand jury. And that's a matter that will take its course. And when Barbara Jones reports back to the court, when she reports back, that could be another dimension here that is relevant to all of this.
Leon Nafok, one of the things that I found especially interesting about your podcast is that, you know, you make the point that we've received a narrative from Woodward and Bernstein about how Watergate unfolded, but the truth as it unfolded was so much more complicated, had so many more twists and turns.
That's right. Yeah, that's certainly what I learned when I did my research on this for the podcast. It really required so many different institutions and individuals to sort of step up and play their role for the story to kind of end the way it did. It was really not at all inevitable, in my opinion, and it really could have gone any number of ways, at many different turning points, I think.
Leon Nafok is host of the podcast Slow Burn. Leon, great to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Mark Toohey, principal deputy to independent counsel Ken Starr. Mark, I appreciate having you on the line as well for your perspective.
Thanks, David. It was a pleasure.
Thanks. And Chris Strom, justice correspondent for Bloomberg News. Chris, thanks to you as well. One last question before we let you go, and that is, what is the next shoe that you are watching to drop here?
Well, I would say two things. One is that we believe that Mueller's going to come forward with the indictment against the actual hacking operation, and we're waiting to see if there's any U.S. citizens who were involved in that. But the other thing is the interview with Trump. In order for Mueller to wrap up his the meat of his investigation into whether there was cooperation in the election meddling and whether there was obstruction of justice.
Right now, it seems like that would wait until after a possible North Korea summit, if that North Korea summit takes place. But we just don't know.
And we don't know. Unlikely. Trump's legal team has been saying that they want to wait until after the North Korea summit. But as we know, that might be falling apart and maybe they're going to come up with another reason to put it off.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us today, Chris.
Thank you.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, apologies, Stefano, he produced this hour, Allison Poli, Catherine Proctor, Tanya Rally, Jeremy Relosa, and James Ross. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. Coming up tomorrow, abortion politics in Ireland, ahead of the vote that could bring big changes to that country's abortion laws. We'll hear the debate and look at battles closer to home. I'm David Wright of ABC News, and this is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.